This is Long Story Short from the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. I'm Ebong Udama. A Connecticut recovery coach could lose his job because of federal cuts.
He's really this kind of glue that's helping people keep their lives together.
That's Laura Tillman, the Connecticut Mirror's human services reporter. She's done a deep dive into how the dismantling of a federal agency could cost a Connecticut recovery coach who's been helping former users navigate sobriety his job. More to come after this.
Hi, I'm Elizabeth Hamilton, executive editor of the Connecticut Mirror. Many news organizations let you read a few articles for free each month, and after that, they make you pay a monthly subscription fee. Not CT Mirror. We don't believe in charging people to stay informed. We don't ask people to enter a credit card number to participate in democracy. If CT Mirror provides value to you, however, we do ask that you consider paying for it through a tax-deductible donation. Just click the red donate button on the top right of any CT Mirror page.
Hello, Laura. Tell us about Carrie Builder, the recovery coach in southeastern Connecticut. Why did he find it necessary to tell us his story?
When I first got interested in telling Carrie Builder's story, I was interested in how it might reveal just what's going on with the opioid crisis in southeastern Connecticut. He's a recovery coach, which means he's helping people who are enrolled in medication-assisted treatment for opioids to get the other tools and pieces of their lives supported, things like struggles with housing or filling a prescription or a doctor's appointment trip that could derail their recovery without that help. So I just thought initially, you know, this would be a really interesting way to learn a lot of different stories through the eyes of someone who's traveling all over these cities and towns in southeastern Connecticut and get a sense of, you know, where are we with the opioid crisis in southeastern Connecticut? What's the status? What's going on? But then over the past 8 months, since the Trump administration has taken office, there have been a number of federal agencies and grants and other sources of funding that have been cut or going to be cut in the future. And among those is the grant funding that funds Carrie Builder's position. So the story kind of moved from being more about, you know, let's take a look at what's going on with the opioid crisis to trying to understand what could potentially be lost if these types of positions go away in the future.
Now, you actually went out with him to see clients, as he went to see clients. What did you learn? It's a $140,000 grant that pays for his services, right?
Him and one other recovery coach, yes.
Okay. So it's a very small amount of money, but in a much bigger budget, we're going to see a lot of cuts on the federal side. So going out with him, how did that inform your thinking about what's actually going on here? Because you actually got to see real people.
Yeah, so it was really interesting because every day is different for Carrie. I went out with him 3 different times over the course of a few months. And some of the kinds of things that I saw him do were seemingly very simple, like giving someone a ride to work. You know, someone who has been in recovery for a while, he needs a ride to work because it's raining out. Usually he rides his bike to work, and Carrie, you know, gives him the ride since he has time that day to do that. That might seem very basic, but it's sort of like, you know, for someone who may have burned a lot of bridges over the course of their substance abuse, they may really not have anyone else to go to for a ride. And while, you know, maybe the cost of an Uber one time or a taxi one time might not seem huge, it does really affect someone who's living close to the poverty line. And then if you lose that job, then sort of all of the elements of your life can start to derail from the job to losing your housing to potentially, going back to using.
Now, we had a really bad opioid crisis. Where do
Right.
we stand now? It seems the numbers are showing that rates have declined over the past few
Yeah.
years. So, why is it necessary to continue funding positions like these?
It's been 3 years of declines. I think that those numbers, I wouldn't say they're misleading, but I think that something to keep in mind when you look at those numbers is that 2021, which was the height, was a really extraordinary year, 2020 and 2021, in terms of the fact that, we had not only fentanyl that was flooding the drug supply, but also we had the COVID pandemic. And one of the most risky things you can do if you're using opioids is to use alone. A lot of people found themselves alone during that period of time and didn't have as much access to the support. So I would say while the numbers are coming down, they're coming down from a really extraordinary number that we saw a few years ago. So we're not like in the clear yet. I think that the numbers are still, much, much higher than they were 10, 20 years ago. And there's a real sense among advocates as well that, that these numbers are not acceptable, that the people are dying who don't need to die. And also that I think the thing you'll hear over and over in the advocacy community is that you can't recover from opioid use if you're dead. So that statistic of just how many people are dying is very important because, whether those people continue to use or not, they'll never get to the recovery phase if we lose them. So I think in terms of saying exactly where we are in this crisis, I think is tricky. We're definitely on a positive trajectory right now in terms of the numbers consistently coming down. A lot of that is owed to the availability of naloxone, which is the overdose reversal drug, and the state has put a lot of money into making that available and making that available in pharmacies, making that available in vending machines. There are pilots for that, making that available at, different places like libraries or like harm reduction centers. So that is key. But I think that part of what interested me about this story is kind of what comes next. You have people surviving opioid use, but then what does it mean to rebuild your life? What does it mean to really live after and live a good life? And how much do we as a country or as a state want to invest in helping people to do that? So the recovery coach position is kind of that position that speaks to that, next step in someone's life.
Interesting quote from Representative Christine McCarthy Vahey. She's from Fairfield. She's a Democrat from Fairfield and co-chair of the Public Health Committee. She said to you that progress isn't free. How much is the state putting into this if, the federal money is not coming in?
Yeah, I mean it's a question that the state is going to have to answer because, these grants come through the state currently. The grant that funds many of these recovery coach positions, for example, come through the Department of Mental Health and Addiction Services, which is a state agency, but that money comes from primarily federal funding. There's also this other pot of money that the state has access to, which is the opioid settlement funds. Those funds are winnings from lawsuits that the state has joined. And we have, more than $600 million worth of money to spend. Some of which has already been spent or has been earmarked for different projects. But there's also some concerns about whether that money will remain as it is now, kind of an independent pot of money to make grants for new things, or whether it will be subsumed into filling holes in the budget for things that the state used to be able to pay for with federal funding. So that's a question moving forward, I think, that we're going to have to watch carefully is, as these different budget holes, you know, with Medicaid and SNAP become bigger and bigger, are we going to start changing our laws so that we're able to draw out from that funding and draw away from the kind of value added programs that that funding once was used for, and instead just use it to pay for things that the state was already paying for some other way? So there are going to be a lot of difficult decisions to make in the years ahead.
And one of them has to do with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act. You talked with Representative Joe Courtney, who represents that part of Connecticut, and he's saying that these cuts could be devastating for his district.
Yeah, there's been some positive economic momentum in that part of the state, driven by jobs at Electric Boat. There's also been this positive momentum toward recovery efforts and helping people enroll in medication-assisted treatment. A lot of people who are enrolled in that kind of treatment, which is a very effective treatment for opioid use, are enrolled through Medicaid. Medicaid's paying for them to use those programs and take those medications. So that's a real concern. And I think that part of it is the fact that there's sort of compounding factors that we're going to be looking at, whether it's, you know, the fact that there's going to be less food assistance, there's going to be less federal support for food pantries, for food banks, there's going to be less money for Medicaid, there's going to be, you know, less money for things like housing grants. So people who are kind of living on the margins, people who are living these kind of fragile, stable lives that are some of the people that Carrie Bilda is helping to rebuild their lives in this painstaking kind of way, are some of the people who may be most at risk at really seeing that derailed. I think that's a concern in southeastern Connecticut, and I think it's a concern, you know, all across the state, really.
And in the meantime, what's the future for Bilda himself?
Well, he's a few years away from retirement, and, you know, a lot of these cuts are kind of rolling out slowly over the course of a few years. So I think it remains to be seen whether, A, Connecticut finds a way to keep this funding going, and B, whether maybe he'll retire, you know, sort of in line with when some of this money goes away. But, you know, hopefully for the next few years, he's going to keep getting to do his work. So, yeah, but it was very impressive to see what he does. I mean, I think the example that I spoke to, you know, giving someone a ride is just a very small piece of what he's doing day to day. He's really this kind of glue that's helping people keep their lives together, that's making sure that they're able to get the things that they need. And it was moving to talk with some of his clients and hear, you know, how much he's meant to them in their lives.
Well, thank you so much, Laura.
Thank you.
Long Story Short is hosted by me, Ebong Udana, and produced by Molly Ingram. Harriet Jones is our editor. WSHU's Alicia Daddario and the Connecticut Mirror's Gabby DeBenedictis are our digital team. This podcast is a collaboration between the Connecticut Mirror and WSHU Public Radio. We go behind the scenes at the home of public policy journalism in Connecticut. More can be found online at ctmirror.org and wshu.org. Our episodes can be found wherever you get your podcasts.